And now for reading and writing and radio.
Drem, lying hidden in the loft, decided not to spit down on the fire after all, because that would betray his presence. He turned his attention back to his mother. The cloth on the loom had grown a little since he saw it last, though not much, because there was so much else to do. A piece of fine checkered wool, blue and violet and flaming red. There was red wool on his mother's weaving rod now, the true burning warrior scarlet that was the very color of courage itself. No woman might wear that color, nor might the half-people who came and went at the tribe's call. It was for the men's side. One day, when he had passed through the boy's house and slain his wolf single-handed, and become a man and a warrior of the tribe, with his grandfather's shield to carry, his mother would weave scarlet on the loom for him.
That eavesdropper is a character Drew in a book by Rosemary Sutcliffe, Warrior Scarlet. But can you wear Warrior Scarlet, too?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
I was a shy little girl when I was a kid, and I grew up to be a fairly shy young woman. Inside me, of course, there was a bold voice urging me to do this, to do that, and maybe one reason I turned into a writer is that it was easier to write out what I was too shy to do than to do it. But gradually, I learned that that bold voice had my best interests at heart. It wanted me to take risks. Living life was better than hanging back and writing about it. Part of this, paradoxically, was learned because I wrote about it. Writing was like the dress rehearsal. Then I had the courage to go ahead and do it. Say the words to the people, not just write them. Well, those of you who know me now know that I'm not shy anymore. Actually, I'm pretty bold. Last March, I did something very bold, and I'll share it with you. I was taking a class to England in June to visit places where English children's books were written or the settings of them. Some of you teachers went along, Helen Jameson, Rose Corgan, and Linval. I had the trip pretty well worked out, but there were still a lot of things I needed to check, so I flew over to England in March to do what's known as a dry run, a sort of dress rehearsal of the trip. One thing I wanted to do was to see if an English author, Richard Adams, who had written Watership Down, would talk to us when we visited Watership Down, and a down is a long, low hill of a special sort that they have in England. I had another address with me of an author I admired and whose books I'd used in my children's lit classes, Rosemary Sutcliffe, an author of splendid historical fiction. How did I find these addresses? Publishers will forward letters, but they won't give out addresses. So I didn't write their publishers. I looked in a big volume in any library called Who's Who, and their biographies were there along with their addresses. So that's sort of cagey, huh? So when I was there, I went right up to Richard Adams's door, figuring that that's what the English would expect a brash, mannerless American to do, also knowing that he'd lived and taught in America, and perhaps that he liked Americans. And after all, what did I have to lose? Well, he could refuse to see me, and I'd be uncomfortable. Or he could even tell me what he thought of me barging in on him asking for favors, and that'd be even more uncomfortable. But I'd get over it, and I wouldn't have disturbed him for very long. On the other hand, he might receive me pleasantly, might even say he'd talk to the class. And that's exactly what happened. We had tea and cookies and a lovely chat, and later, when June came, he spent a whole wonderful afternoon with us. But that's another story. My courage was strengthened and my spirits were buoyed up from my good time with Richard Adams, and so I hopped on the train and I went on to the town where Rosemary Sutcliffe lived. And without too much trouble, I found her house and I knocked on her door. I was prepared for this visit. On this very trip, I had read 3 fat books by Rosemary Sutcliffe that I hadn't read before, books about when the Romans were in Britain some 2,000 years ago. And then I'd also taught 2 of her other books recently. I'd found an autobiography in the Sangamon State Library and read it before I left, and you know that an autobiography is a story that one writes about one's own life. I knew that Rosemary Sutcliffe was crippled before I read the autobiography, but this book described what it was like to have rheumatoid arthritis at 2 years old, just as you've learned to walk and to be in hospitals and wheelchairs and not go to school. Her mother read to her the years that she was on her back, books that we might consider too old for a 5 or a 6 or a 7-year-old, Dickens and Trollope and Thackeray and Beowulf. She didn't learn to read herself until she was 9 years old, when she went for a while to a little dame school where her teacher was a kindly 86-year-old woman. Dame school is like having school with a few other students in somebody's living room. At 14, she went on to art school and became a painter. But when she was 30, she had a book published called The Queen Elizabeth Story, and from then on, she spent her time writing historical novels. Richard Adams had warned me how very crippled that she was. "It's amazing," he said, "that she's ever written anything at all." So I stood there at her door, and I didn't plan to stay. The housekeeper came, and I introduced myself and said that I was from the United States and taught from Rosemary Sutcliffe's books and enjoyed them very much, and if Miss Sutcliffe wouldn't mind, I'd like to take 2 minutes of her time to tell her how much I do like her books and use them in my teaching. The housekeeper went away and came back in a couple of moments and said, "Miss Sutcliffe would like to have you come and have some tea with her." And then what a lovely hour I had with Rosemary Sutcliffe, and in spite of her 2 little yappy, snappy dogs that didn't like me at all and gave my ankles a hard time. Yes, she is very crippled. She's really no bigger than a 7-year-old, and you can't see how she could hold a pen in her twisted hands, much less write with her hands. And yet she's written 20-some remarkable books in her lifetime, books that have taken much research in many libraries. She would have had to have gone to those libraries in her wheelchair and spent long hours there. And being a person who hadn't had much school from the time, she was 9 to 14 was her formal schooling, she wouldn't have had a lot of, she would have had to have been self-educated, that's what I'm trying to say. And she would also, I'm sure, have been in pain, because after the pain described in her autobiography, which went on into her young womanhood, I should think that she would still continue throughout her life having some sort of pain. And I kept thinking, as I was visiting with her, what courage, what persistence, what spirit to keep on and to accomplish so much instead of feeling sorry for herself and giving up. I didn't ask her to talk to our class. I left a copy of my historical novel, The Taste of Spruce Gum, and back home I wrote her a thank you note for the visit, and then she wrote me a thank you note for the book. But when we got to England in June with the class, I wrote her a note saying that we were all here and that we'd love to meet her for a few minutes when we were nearby, and that we had a gift for her, but that we really didn't want to disturb her and we could mail it if she'd rather that we'd not stop. But she answered my note and said, "I will be happy to see you again, to meet your class, and to receive my gift." And so we went. And to understand our gift, you need to know a little more about the book that we'd all read, the book called Warrior Scarlet. This is a story about a Bronze Age boy, Drim. The Bronze Age in England is about 2,700 years ago, 700 years before Christ was born. And this was the metal that the people had learned how to smelt, and used it to make weapons and tools and ornaments. Before that was what we call the New Stone Age, and before that was the Old Stone Age, and following the Bronze Age was the Iron Age, and after that the Romans came to Britain with their more advanced weapons. In this Bronze Age, a boy of Drem's tribe had to grow into a warrior and a hunter, or to be ostracized from the tribe. And this was an awful fate in an age where you needed the protection of numbers and you needed to be with your own kind. But Drem had a handicap. He was born with a useless, withered left arm. The book is the story of how, in spite of his handicap and his failure in killing that wolf that will prove that he is a warrior and will win him his warrior scarlet, how later, after he has left the tribe, he fights and kills a different wolf under much worse conditions. A terrible blizzard is raging and freezing temperatures, and he saves a friend's life. And then they reconsider and welcome him back into the tribe. He doesn't succeed in this physical feat by luck. He has worked very hard for years, strengthening his body and his good arm and learning the cunning and the strategy that helped him to make up for his handicap. Here is a passage out of the book that will give you a little more flavor of Sutcliffe's writing. It comes just a little after the part I read for the opener, and he is still lying up in the rafters, looking down on his grandmother and his grandfather and his mother, who is weaving. And he tells the mother that that's going to be a cloak for him. And she says that that was going to be for Drem's brother. And he says, "Drustic is young, and the wind blows less cold for him. He can wait. Let you set the loom up for him next time." "Next time and next time and next time," Drem's mother said quietly. "Sometimes I wish that I had been born to the men's side. Sometimes I grow weary of spinning and the weaving and the grinding of corn." The grandfather spat into the fire. "By right, there should be three sons' wives to weave and grind for me." "Then there should be three sons for them to weave for also," Drem's mother said with a spurt of tired and angry laughter, thrusting back a bright wisp of hair that had strayed, as her hair was always straying, from the blue linen net in which it was gathered. "Or would you have them all widows?" Drem knew his mother in this mood. It came when she was very tired. The grandfather drew his brows together and glared. "Aye, a hard thing it is that I grow old, and of all my three sons, there is not one left, and that the wife of my youngest son should taunt me with it. A hard thing it is that I should have but one grandson to carry my spear after me, I who have been among the greatest warriors of the tribe." The old one grows forgetful, Drem thought. He has lived so long with old battles that his mind grows dim, and he has forgotten my brother. His mother turned again from her weaving with a fierceness that struck him even at that moment as odd. "Two grandsons there are at the hearth fire. Have you forgotten?" It was then that the grandfather said the thing that altered the whole world for Drem, so that it could never return to being quite the same as before. "Nay, then, I have not forgotten. I grow old, but I can still count the tally of my 10 fingers. 2 grandsons there are at the hearth fire. But a grandson at the hearth fire is not a grandson among the spear warriors of the tribe. Is it likely, think you, that the young one will ever win his way into the men's side with a spear arm that he cannot use?" There was a sudden silence. Drem's mother had turned back to her loom, but she was not weaving. The grandfather sat and glowered, and in the warm shadows of the loft above them, the small boy lay on his stomach, staring down at them with dilated eyes, and feeling all at once cold and sick. Then Drem's mother said, "Talor the hunter is one of the great ones of the men's side to this day. Talor the hunter was a man and a warrior before he ever lost a hand to the cattle raiders," the grandfather said, deep and grumbling, and he eyed her with a kind of disgusted triumph. Nah, it is in my mind that the boy must go to the half-people when the time comes. He is often enough away with Dolly and the sheep as it is. Maybe he will make a shepherd." He spat again. "Lord of the sun, that I should have a grandson herding sheep, I who have been such a warrior as men speak of round the fire for 100 winters. If the child fails, then he must go to the half-people," Drem's mother said, and her voice sounded tight in her throat. "But it may be that he will not fail. He is your own grandson, and not lightly turned from the things he sets his mind to do." The book is a lot more than this plot, and there's more even to this plot, and I do recommend it to you. But back to our gift. We brought Rosemary Sutcliffe a scarlet sweatshirt, and on it, in big white letters, we had printed not the name of the book, Warrior Scarlet, but A Warrior Scarlet. And now you can see what we meant, that, like Drem, Rosemary Sutcliffe had a great handicap, and she had fought and overcome it. She also was a Warrior Scarlet, is a Warrior Scarlet. She knew what we meant without being told, and she was delighted with her gift. So that's my story for you today. And what about writing ideas? The obvious one is, are you a Warrior Scarlet? Are you winning out over some sort of handicap? It isn't easy, and there are lots of discouragements. You might write about how hard it is to keep on going sometimes, to try again. You might tell something that has helped you. And it may not be a physical handicap. You may be very timid, and are trying to overcome that timidity. You may have a quick temper and are trying to control it. Or do you know someone who is working at overcoming a handicap? Tell us about her or him. Another topic could be, when did you do something bold, and how did it turn out? Good? Bad? Or no big deal? Did anyone know how much courage it took? I have to keep reminding myself when I look at a new class of writing students at Sangamon State that for some of them, maybe for a whole lot of them, coming to a writing class is an act of considerable courage. They're laying themselves on the line, and they don't know what they're in for. They might get destructive criticism or rejection or ridicule because your writing is so much a part of yourself, and it's hard to take those things. Now, I try hard not to let that happen in my classes, that sort of attitude, but the new students don't know that. So they're taking a big risk, a risk of exposing personal thoughts and feelings and of being trampled on. I need to say to myself, because I do forget, look, Jackie, these people are all Warrior Scarlets. They've gotten the courage to come and write. So here are the ideas for your writing today. Are you working to overcome a handicap, and can you tell about somebody who, or can you tell about somebody who is? Or when have you taken a risk? What was it, and how did it turn out? Tell us the story with plenty of detail.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.